Today there's no written questions. What is the correct and proper method of doing walking meditation for a beginner? Well, there's different ways of doing walking meditation. But the purpose of walking meditation is twofold. One is you can do it as a way to just help keep the mind grounded in the present moment, like in between sitting meditations, or any time that you're walking, just to keep the mind from wandering the external things, to kind of to keep it focused and just relaxed. So just being aware of the sort of walking, or as we did yesterday, just simply being aware of the feet, as it, you know, lifting, placing, and just a way to kind of relax the mind and getting some exercise. Or you can do it as a more detailed vipassana exercise, in which you tune in to the sequential movements of lifting, swinging, placing, and seeing how all the movements of the body basically are just occurring in a segmented sequence. For example, you know, to walk, your foot lifts off the ground, the heel lifting off the ground is one movement that arises and vanishes. Then the foot, lower leg swings forward, the swinging movement arises and vanishes. Then the foot lowers, the heel touches the ground, it arises and vanishes. Then the weight of the body, then the foot, the toes pressing into the floor, another movement arise and vanish, and the body shifting forward arise and vanish, and then it repeats on the other side. So it's a way of tuning in to the detailed sequential subtle movements of the walking process. It can be extended into when you move your arms also, like lifting, stretching, lowering, moving, turning, looking. It's a way of tuning in to the moment-to-moment movements of the body to see impermanence, how each of those movements has its own arising and vanishing that's pushed by the mind. So it can be done as a, you know, just a way of kind of relaxing, or a relaxed way of walking, not too much detailed concentration, or it can be done as a detailed type of exercise, as in the vipassana retreats. Well, doing meditation, when we feel pain, we change our position. We can concentrate about pain. What is the proper way to deal with physical pain? Again, the idea is to not be bullied around by pain, and pain and other unpleasant sensations. And so at some point, to train yourself to endure pain, because most of the pains are not that life-threatening, or are not going to be something real serious. Now, some might be. Probably at least 90% of them are not. They're just irritating. And then the mind makes excuses why, well, if I don't change, I'm going to go crippled, or I'm going to get gangrene, or so many stories. But that's just a con job by the mind. But it's often difficult to know when something is might be serious and when something is not. It just takes your own experience to do that. But basically, we try to train our mind to endure discomfort longer and longer, because we'll never know. You know, there's always going to be pain in our life, and we can't always be running around away from it, or taking drugs to numb the pain, or any other kind of distractions. So to confront it and realize that 90% of the pain is actually created in your mind. 10% of it might be actual physical. and that there's a difference between pain and suffering. Physical pain is a sensation, but the mind that struggles against it is the suffering. And we can't do much about the physical pain, but we have to observe the suffering of the mind and try to let go of that. That's the main thing. Please name some books that we can give our non-Buddhist friends to read about Buddhism. They have questions that we can't answer. Give them my autobiography.
The first one or the
second? People hook them, see, the storyline, they get hooked by it, and then when they come to the Dhamma, so you kind of introducing Dhamma through the sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So they can relate to that part. The list could be endless. Just look on the internet, you know. The books by Bhante Ji are good, like Mindfulness in Plain English, and that series that he's written, those are written kind of for Western people with in mind and so on. So. Mindfulness in Plain English, his other couple books. When the body is calm and concentrated, sensations are not very clear. To speed up, is this right? How can we continue on speeding? The speeding up is the perception in your mind, it's not the body. You know, the feeling of the calm body being calm and peaceful, that's one thing, but the cells and molecules are still, you know, arising and vanishing and going through activity in their normal speed. But it's our concentration that's dull. And so we have to, as I mentioned before, that the concentration is like the microscope. And the longer you keep the mind focused, it's like turning up the power, and you'll be able to notice subtler and subtler vibrations. It's that the mind has to pick up the subtler vibrations. Vibrations themselves are just what they are, but our mind is not in the position to notice them because it's distracted. So you can't notice two things at the same time. You can't be distracted with outside things and then feel things subtler than going on inside your body, or even subtler thoughts moving through your mind. So that's why you have to concentrate and focus the mind inside, and then gradually things will become clear. But sometimes you have to pay special attention to it, because the mind can very easily space out and get sucked into different states, in which kind of void states where you can't feel anything and so on. So you have to, guide, keep bringing the mind back and to guide it onto the tracks. And that's why the four foundations of mindfulness is that kind of a tracking system. To keep bringing the mind back to the following those steps of body, feeling, mind states, and dhammas. You feel them both at the same time. The mind can actually notice many things going on simultaneously. It may not be exactly simultaneously, but the mind is working in times of nanoseconds. That means millions of moments per second. And so, that's why in meditation you can feel many different things. You can feel sensations in your head or your hand or your feet, or in between. You can hear sounds, you know, within the space of a second. You can hear many different sensations arising and vanishing if your mind is focused. But if it's distracted, you won't see anything. That's the whole point. Without concentration and mindfulness, don't expect to get any success in meditation. But people don't have patience. They want, sort of instant something to focus on or get concentration. But for most people, it's a very gradual process. But, if you keep your mind there, you'll see. There's perception and sensation and perception going on basically at the same time. As I meditate almost every day, the rest of the day I try to be mindful as much as possible. Since I haven't reached the Sotapanna state, what's the guarantee I will not be born in one of the hills? I'm sorry. Well, the guarantee will be before you die, attain the Sotapanna state. You may not be there now, but if you apply your mind diligently, there's a good chance you can reach that state before you die. So that should be your goal, but not really the goal. If you have this anticipation of something in the future, that can help you practice, of course, but the practice has to be relaxed and it has to be balanced. And if you have this sort of neurotic, clinging and grasping, that's going to be the kind of tension that actually prevents your mind from getting there. I'm going through these a little bit quickly because otherwise there's not going to be any time for some concluding remarks. Don't worry about that. Somebody will tell you, I'm sure. You talked of materiality as vibrations. You talked about vipassana, change in body sensations. And finally, the emptiness. These are very intellectual questions that take too much to answer them. Mind is also vibrations, energy, and emptiness. I find it difficult to understand. Don't try to understand it intellectually. Develop awareness, develop mindfulness and concentration, and then you will understand it. Trying to understand it intellectually without a deep degree of mindfulness and concentration will just keep confusing you. That's why the Buddha always, the emphasis is on practice, 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 practice. Having some initial intellectual understanding to form a general framework to focus the mind, but the details are only going to come out when you develop your mindfulness concentration. And as you're developing mindfulness and concentration, the bhavanamaya punya, the meditation wisdom, will gradually start opening and building up. And then at some point, then you will, get to the deeper experiences like entering the stream and so on. In reality, everything is just vibrations passing through awareness. Doesn't contemplating on pain as one form of suffering give more insight to the meditations than labeling it as pain? You're right. You don't have to label it pain. The pain's obvious, right? You can see your mind. That's the pain. You don't have to call it pain. It's quite obvious. But sometimes the label will help just to alert your mind to see it objectively. The labels are just to help you to objectify it rather than getting lost into it and struggling with it. So at least, let's say, normally when a pain arises without good mindfulness, you just you'd kind of lose the attention to the body and the breathing and just start struggling with it because there's no objectivity, there's no distance. So by alerting yourself and being aware, this pain is arising, you kind of put yourself on guard and kind of watch it objectively. And don't allow the mind to get sucked into the pain. You keep an objective distance to it so you can see the sensations and the ebbing and flowing of the painful sensations and so on. And if you do that long enough, that pain may then dissipate and disappear, or you just as long as you can keep that objectified distance and relax the muscles and everything else around that pain and just let it be there, and then it might not go away, and you can still just contemplate other things in spite of that pain. You contemplate other things. There's one sort of what I explain to people. If you have a, you know, pain usually is on a scale of 1 to 10. So let's say you have a pain of 8, like a pain in your knee, and it's pulling your mind. So find a pain of 7, you know, somewhere else. Something that's just slightly less painful that will distract your attention from here, but it'll still be painful enough to observe this one, but it'd be a little bit painful in that one. Then when you're observing this one, go to a pain of 6. And the mind goes to the pain of 6. And by that time it's distancing itself more than this one. And then go to a pain of 5. And then pain of 4. And by that time you're giving these other pains a time to play themselves out and disappear or change. And then you can get back to your meditation. Anyway, all these, of course, are just little mental games. In the end, it's all a matter of just basically just gritting your teeth, you know, like the Buddha gave his instructions, just grit your teeth and just, you know, sit through it. Or, you know, change the posture. Like the Buddha, you know, sat down, I'm not going to get up from the seat and let my blood and bones dry up. And that's the way he got enlightened. Could you explain how different between Buddhism and other religions? No, I don't want to get into all that. Buddhist teachings are basically dogma-based, believing in certain scriptures, but Buddhist teaching is investigation. The Buddha simply gives us the tools how to investigate our body and mind to realize the truth of the mind and of existence within us, where most other religions are just telling you what existence is and just telling you to believe that and hopefully things will work out. So I'm sorry if I kind of passed over some of the questions a little bit quickly, but I wanted to explain, you know, the practice of the M&Ms. Those who haven't heard that before, or review, because this is a very practical way, a short meditation that you can practice during your daily life. That a lot of people don't have either the discipline, the time or the discipline to, let's say, sit for an hour in the morning or hour in the evening or even 30 minutes in the morning or evening. But normally meditating once or twice a day for a longer period like that is usually recommended for, you know, people that are more serious about developing their meditation practice. But even with our good intentions, we find ourselves slipping from that. So these minute meditations are designed to fill the gap, you might say. And also, even if you do meditate in the morning or evening, there's a long period between those two sits, let's say 10 or 12 hours, where you may not be very mindful. And so the M&Ms are a way to fill in that gap. And an M&M stands for minute meditation. And basically it's a training where you train yourself to stop once an hour for 1 minute. Let go whatever you were doing. Let go of the future or the past, whatever you were clinging to, and bring your attention to the body. And just, you know, feel the feet pressing the ground and take one or two deep, slow breaths and just bring your attention away from the external world and bring it to the body, as I was trying to teach you today. And just practice a minute of awareness, just parking the mind in neutral gear. And then shift the mind out of the future, the neurotic push to the future or the past, and put it into neutral. Just be aware, breathing in, standing, breathing out, standing. And just basically relax and kind of break that neurotic pushing into the future. But in that 1 minute, you can reflect on the last hour. Reflect what is in your mind. If you were angry in the last hour, upset in the last hour, did something foolish in the last hour, or whatever, you can just sort of reflect on that. You can forgive yourself or forgive somebody else if you, had done something unskillful. You can send out just 30 seconds of metta. May all beings be free from greed, hatred, and delusion. May all beings be free from suffering. May all beings be happy. But basically the idea is to, break that neurotic push into the future, recenter yourself, release whatever negative thoughts might be in your mind, or just simply the stress and tension of whatever was happening before, and try to relax. And then you continue again in the next hour. But if you can do that every hour, then in 1 minute, you see, anybody can stop and stay focused for 1 minute. It's not really that difficult. But if I ask you to stop for 20 minutes in the day, 20 minutes, impossible. But if I say, just stop for 1 minute, 1 minute, baba. Oh, 1 minute? Yeah, okay. So, 1 minute is doable. So it's kind of psychological. So in 1 minute, you're going to get a quality meditation in 1 minute. Because anybody really could keep their mind focused for 1 minute. But it's after 1 or 2 minutes, restlessness starts arising and so on. So if you can do that 10 or 12 times during the day, you'll have 10 or 12 quality minutes of meditation. Because even if you meditate for 30 minutes in the morning, you'd be lucky if 5 minutes was actually what you would call quality meditation. The other 25 would be in and out of kind of drowsiness or thinking about the work ahead of day or problems. And the same with the evening. So doing these M&Ms, at least you're getting a quality, 10 minutes of meditation in, or at least awareness, where you clear out your mind for a minute. And also the frequent repetition is important, because the mind works on repetition. And so the more you do it, even if it's short, that will stick in the mind more. And you'll feel the benefit of doing that, especially just breaking that neurotic push into the future and just pausing to smell the roses, as it were. Pausing to just feel your breath or your heartbeat, or feel those sensations in the body. That's why using mindfulness of the body is an ongoing kind of continuous general object of awareness is very valuable, as we did in that standing meditation. And you can do it any time. Just bring your mind to present moment and just try to feel some sensations, and it's very pleasant. So the M&M, the M&M candies, right? The motto is melt in your mouth, not in your hand. Well, these M&Ms melt in your mind, not in your hand. Because you stop for a minute, that neurotic push to the future, you take a deep, slow breath, hold in the breath a few seconds to feel that oxygenation of the blood, and it's so pleasant. It feels like a cool shower on a hot day inside of your brain. And so it's, at least for me, that's the way I feel it. And it's just a way to kind of recenter and get your wits, especially if you've been running around mad for the last hour and so on. So it's a way that you reduce stress hour by hour rather than allowing it to accumulate hour by hour, as most people do. They never stop to rest or release their negative thoughts. They just keep holding it on and keeping that inside, and when at night you're all stressed out. So that's a very useful practice to try to...
Even at the workplace?
Anywhere. And let alone even 1 minute. You know, time is precious, right? So we have to milk the day for all it's worth. All of our spare 10 seconds here, 20 seconds here. How much time do you waste? You go to the shopping center, you're standing in line with your shopping cart, having to wait 10 minutes for the line. Instead of looking about and criticizing this person's hairdo and this person's clothes, or looking through the People's magazines to find out where Michael Jackson was reborn. You know, you can just close your eyes, feel your feet on the ground, and take a couple of deep, slow breaths, send out metta to all these harried shoppers and so on, and all these mothers trying to control their kids and so on. Just, you know, may all beings be well and happy. May all beings be peaceful. So you can use the time valuably, but we don't know how. We waste our time so easily. So this is a training. When you park there, come to a red light, you know, you have 10, 15 seconds to wait there. Just, you know, just feel the steering wheel, be aware of sitting, breathing in, sitting, breathing out, sitting, or hearing, and somebody's honking their horn, hearing. But, you know, you get my drift, right? So there's plenty of times when we can even pause for the space of just even one breath, and especially learning how to take deep, slow breaths. It's very relaxing, and it really zooms your mind into the present moment. And you just slowly breathe in, and you feel that expansion of the chest, and holding the air in, because it's such a prominent sensation. The mind just, you know, stays there. And then, especially with the out-breath, the relaxation of the out-breath. You know, that's good for at least 15 or 20 seconds. Or even 30 seconds. So that's very useful. A very useful adjunct or a supplement to our daily activities. Okay, as I mentioned before, we'd like to do one last short meditation. And I think we did, as we did yesterday, we're going to start with the chanting the Namo Buddhaya. I think I did that yesterday with you. So the Namo Buddhaya again literally means homage to the Buddha. But when you're doing it as a chanting for meditation, that the homage to the Buddha, you can see it as, you know, being the Buddha mind that we have within ourselves, recognizing and acknowledging that vibration of pure awareness being the Buddha, the vibration of the ocean of wisdom, which is the pure awareness that's beyond self and I. That's the real Buddha, the one who knows, the knowing mind. So by chanting that in this nice slow way, the vibrations also help to tranquilize the cells and the body, and you know, leave the mind in a nice space for then, you know, doing the meditation. And we'll finish with some metta, sending out metta. So you can just sit straight. Relax. Just begin with several deep, slow breaths. We're going to chant the Namo Buddhaya, a few rounds of that, and when I hit this bell, that means we chant one more time very slowly to finish. And for those who don't know it, you can just listen to one round of it, and then invite you to join in chanting if you like. You can combine this with kind of a metta vibration, metta meditation. And when you're chanting Namo Buddhaya, just imagine that vibration of Buddhaya, meaning wisdom, pure love, pure wisdom, pure awareness, kind of going outwards, first filling up your own body and mind, and then radiating outwards through the towns and the cities, entering the bodies and minds of the people and beings to calm their fevers of greed, hatred, and delusion, and make their minds happy. So again, just take a few deep, slow breaths. Namo Buddhaya. Filling up your own body and mind, purifying the nervous system, radiating that vibration of Buddhaya outward, that Buddhaya having the meaning of pure wisdom, pure love or metta, pure awareness. So with each out-breath, with each heartbeat, just imagine this pulsation of Buddhaya radiating outward, and send that, direct that vibration back to your homes or your family members. Just imagine that vibration of Buddhaya entering the bodies and minds, nervous system, soothing the wounds and stress, suffering, awakening the seed of love and wisdom in their heart. And keep imagining that, feeling that vibration radiating further out across the whole city of Toronto, into the south, north, east and west. It's like a slow moving fog, like heat radiating from a hot wood stove, like warm vibrations of Buddha, wisdom, metta, pure awareness. It's passing through the bodies and minds and nervous systems, all the being, tranquilizing the fires of their greed, hatred and delusion, soothing the wounds of their suffering, and awakening the seed of wisdom in their heart. Again, with each out-breath, each heartbeat, each pulsation, that vibration of Buddha spreading ever further outwards. And imagine that going back to Sri Lanka, your other home country, just enveloping the whole world, the whole earth, the vibrations, wisdom, love, awareness. If you can, just imagine the earth like suspended in space, like those photographs from the NASA, the beautiful blue-green earth, with clouds over it, suspended in space. Just imagine being surrounded and permeated by the warm golden glow of Buddha, pure wisdom, pure metta, pure awareness. It's transforming the suffering and ignorance in the minds of all beings into happiness and wisdom. And if you can imagine it, imagine extending those vibrations but die out to the whole universe, permeating all the Deva Lokas, Brahma Lokas, extending to the realm of the hungry ghosts and hell, cultivating these thoughts. May all beings in the whole world, the whole universe, be free from greed, hatred, fear and ignorance. Free from pain, sorrow and sufferings of body and mind. May all beings have the patience, strength, mindfulness and wisdom to meet and overcome all difficulties in life. May all beings have the precious opportunity to hear the mind-healing teachings of the Buddha. May be able to learn and practice meditation, to follow the Noble Eightfold Path to the end of suffering. May all beings be able to live peacefully and harmoniously together, understanding the ultimate interconnectedness and interdependence of all things. May all beings be well, peaceful, and wise. May all beings be well, peaceful and wise. May all beings be well, peaceful and wise. Dukkha pata chani dukkha baya pata chani baya Soka pata chani soka Hontu sabbe pipanino Sabbe tiyo vivanjantu Sambarogo vinasatu Mati bhavato antarayo Sukhi digayuko bhava Bhavatu sabbamangalam Rakkhantu sabbadevata Sambam bundanubhavena Sambadhammanubhavena Sambe sanganubhavena sadasoti bhavantu te. By the goodness and the power, all the merits we've been accumulating for these 2 days of taking refuge, following the precepts, cultivating bhavana, share these merits with all of our departed loved ones, relatives, and share these merits with all other beings, the devas, beings in all the different lokas. May the power and the merits of cultivating the sila, samadhi, and panya that continue to create the wholesome conditions for this mind to be able to continue to be attracted to seek out what it needs in the way of Dhamma, to be able to follow the Noble Eightfold Path, to eventually to be able to reach the end of suffering, to attain the everlasting bliss and happiness of Nibbana.